Golf Rules Questions podcast episode 109 is all about the Vic Open with stories from the tour by podcast Man of the People, Funny Man McPhee. But Blakey and Stuart also cover a couple of incorrect drops by two of the best players in the world in Rory McIlroy and Jaakko Niemann that were costly. There are also a couple of clubland stories to keep you on your toes. But just before we get into that episode, I want to encourage you that if you like these podcasts, please share it with a friend or two. Send them a link and get them listening. As well as the podcast, Stuart and Blakey also produce The Drop Zone, which is a weekly rules newsletter that gives you some helpful hints, a few rules questions, and there is usually a funny video to keep you entertained and educated. So send us your email address if you have yet to sign up. And when you receive the newsletter, make sure to forward that on to your captain or manager at your club. They are free to distribute it to all of their club members. We also have merchandise that you can purchase so that you are representing the best Golf Rules podcast in the world. Grab a t-shirt, a hat, or even a hoodie featuring the Rules Roo or the Wombat Caddy. And now, whether you're in your car or going for a walk or just taking a break after mowing your lawn, enjoy this episode of the Golf Rules Questions podcast.
Stuart's one of our highest ranked working rules officials that we have. One of the best we've got. He knows his stuff.
Welcome everyone to episode 109 of the Golf Rules Questions podcast. Blakey's back, and so is podcast man of the people, McPhee. Jeez, your title is getting longer and longer, but you really are a man of the people. I mean, how many people did you speak to at the Vic Open? Just volunteers, scorers, other referees. There were more people flocked around your cart than there was the players, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know how to come back without Blakey. I've got no words. And hello to you and hello to everyone listening in and watching. I will say that with the Victorian Open, which we may speak about, the volunteers love when you thank them. At the end of the day, if you go up and say, thanks very much for your help today, really appreciate it, you know, you did well with the crowds, blah, blah, you know they love it. They're all volunteering, and the events would find it very difficult to run without them. Extraordinarily difficult to run it without all those volunteers. And the volunteers do like to, because I've been one of those. You know, before I got into this, I did a lot of volunteering at events, and I've volunteered the Vic Open and the Australian Open, and sometimes you feel like, am I actually valued here? And so for an official, you know, come up who's got a lanyard around or a radio on to come up and say, thanks for your help today. You know, it's the power of words. So, yeah, I don't want to, not trying to blow my own trumpet. I think it's just such a simple thing that we can do to thank those people who are putting out their time and giving it their time. And you can see they love it. If you say, great job, they love it. Anyway, that's all, not here to talk about that. But.
Well, we are here to talk about the Vic Open that just happened at 13th Beach. It's one of the only tournaments in the world that has men and women playing at the same time, not in the same groups. They usually stagger them, boy group, girl group, boy group, girl group, something like that. There was 132 men and 90 women.
The 90 sounds right. Yep.
Or was it 144 men? Might have been 132 men, 90 women, playing for 420,000 or 450,000.
Yeah, and great international feel in the women. A lot of people from Korea, Japan,
yep.
US, Europe.
Yeah, so that's affiliated with the WPGA, the women's side, and the men's side is affiliated with the PGA Tour of Australasia, so that's where the players are coming from. It's on those order of merits, and they play for a separate check of $425,000 each, $450,000 each, sorry, and a separate championship trophy, and it was great. Week didn't rain at all, and it was super hot on the Saturday Sunday.
Did the wind blow at all?
It did. It definitely blew on the Friday.
My cart was shaking on Friday, like physically shaking.
There might have been the baked beans.
No.
So I only worked the 2 days. I only worked Thursday, Friday, because we have it's two courses. So to fit that many players on, you've got to have two courses. So we've got the creek course down there, the beach course,
And I worked the Thursday, Friday. I was Thursday, Friday on the back nine of the creek course, which is probably my favourite nine on the creek course. It's sort of just this one big paddock, whereas the front nine sort of goes around the houses and sort of resort type. But yeah, I saw some awesome golf. There was some tricky hole locations that we got to watch players, you know, work their way around. And it was lots of fun. And then you were there still for the Saturday, Sunday, and even got to walk with the final groups.
Yeah, we become desensitized to how good these players are and how far they hit it. And I remember my first professional tournament, which I did with you, I'm standing there with my mouth open at how far they were driving it and how far they were hitting. I don't feel that way anymore, but every now and again I remind myself, when I see guys hitting iron off a tee, so the hole's like 360 metres, let's call that 400 yards, and they're just hitting a 3-iron off the tee, and they are hitting that 3-iron 260, 270, 280 metres, 300 yards plus or minus, that's a long way. They're hitting that 3-iron a lot further than 90% of club members hit their driver.
Yeah.
I mean, they just hit the ball a long way.
Time to roll back the ball.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to open up that topic, but it's just, we watch great golf, and the courses were in incredible condition. Like, I didn't see the creek where you were, and I heard it was in incredible condition.
Yeah.
Sir
Steve does a great job down there putting the two courses together with, I think he's just got just over 20 staff, a tad more than 20 staff. So does a great job. And it's quite funny, I've been involved with the Vic Open at 13th Beach, apart from the last 3 years. Before that, it was about 8 years in a row. More in operations than refereeing. So I'd see Steve and talk to Steve quite a lot about where we're going to, you know, put buildings and marquees and all that kind of thing. And a few of the years, they've actually, it's rained on the Monday or Tuesday, like absolutely bucketed down, and they've spent 2 days trying to fix the bunkers instead of working out some other things. But you didn't get any rain in the lead up to the tournament, which was amazing, but it still had a grass tinge on it because we have had a lot of rain early January, mid-January. So, but it at the same time as that green tinge, because of the last 2 weeks, hot weather, no rain, it really played hard and fast. And yeah, those three irons were bouncing out down the fairway. It was a fantastic tournament. I didn't stay for the weekend. You can give us a shout on who won and how everyone played on the weekend.
Do you want to get to the GRQOTW? 108?
Sure.
And then we'll come back to the tournament stuff. Is that all right?
I'll just, you just run this thing.
Certainly run a bit more efficiently, but... okay.
All right, go for it. The GRQOTW 108.
Right. Playing in a stroke round at Wombat Hills, Andy, the average golfer, has a 12-year-old caddy as part of a school program. He is playing the drivable par 4, fifth hole, and he plays his second shot to the green. However, it goes too far and over the green towards a red penalty area. As Andy arrives behind the green, he finds his caddy, who had walked ahead, standing there near the red line, laughing with some of his friends. Andy, the average golfer, inquires about his ball and discovers that his caddy had deliberately kicked his ball as it was approaching the penalty area, which kept it out. Andy estimates the spot where his ball would have come to rest in the penalty area. Based on a brief conversation with his caddy and the friends, he drops the ball inside the penalty area based on that estimation. He then decides to take penalty area relief and drops his ball again. Outside the penalty area, Andy holes out in 4 more strokes. What is Andy, the average golfer's score for that hole?
Well, I've got a fair few questions from that question, but basically his caddy's caused the ball to move. He stopped or deliberately deflected the ball while it was in motion, is what I meant to say. That's a 2-shot penalty because it's his caddy. So I think that gets him to 4 because that was his second shot. And then he dropped it in the PA where it was going to come to rest, but then he gets to take relief under rule 17.1. Sorry, that might get him to 4. No, that gets him to 5. for taking penalty relief. And then he holds out in four more shots, so he had nine for the hole. Is that what you got?
Yeah, so what if he drops in the penalty area? Is that for free or is that a penalty?
Well, it's a two-shot penalty, and he need for the caddy deliberately causing the ball, deliberately deflecting the ball. Okay. And then the procedure is he can't play as it lies. He needs to estimate where it's going to come to rest, where it would have come to rest. And if that is in the penalty area, general area, bunker, tang area, you drop the ball. Whereas if it was on the green, you place the ball. So he had to drop it in this area within the club length, in the penalty area where he thought it would come to rest. And then after that, he could have played as it lies. So he gets that two-shot penalty for the breach. But then he could have played it as it lies, or he could take an extra penalty stroke under 17.1 and get it outside the penalty area.
So my next question to you is, once he worked out that the kid stopped it from going in the penalty area and he's going, well, I don't want to drop it in the water down there, can I just, rather than dropping it based on the estimated spot where it would have come to rest, can I just drop it outside the penalty area instead?
Yeah, instead of going through that procedure of where it would have come to rest, you know, if there was 2 foot, 3 foot of water, it would just be ridiculous to make him drop the ball there. So he could have just proceeded under 17.1 straight away, and that would have, he wouldn't have had to drop it twice. There's no penalty for that drop, for what he did, but there's a penalty for taking relief from the penalty area anyway. Now, I've got a couple of questions. Why was his caddy down behind the green?
He's a kid. Let's make him 10
if he was learning the game. 12, oh, if he was learning the game, he would be there.
You can't tie him to the bag with a rope and keep him there.
And then his friends are playing truant.
So the kids are at the back of the... His friends are down the back of the green and they're waving at him, giggling and laughing. He's going, right, I'm going to go down and spend a few minutes with him. He's allowed to be down there. And Andy's going, oh, I hate this school program. They run it every year. Yeah, do whatever you want. Just don't get me into trouble. Right. So off you don't, you've gone to the back of the green. And he has got him into trouble.
He's caused Andy's score to be higher than it should be.
Right, well, Andy's got to cop that.
Yeah. So 9 was the final score.
I think that's right.
Right, yeah.
I think a few people got that right.
So can we get back to the Vic Open?
Sure, we could do that. A few rabbit hole. One was probably the most obvious rabbit hole relief I've ever given in my life.
Right.
There was dirt everywhere, droppings everywhere and holes everywhere. It was just so blatant. And, yeah, I mean, it was actually the nearest point was a little distance away, and then even then there was heaps of dirt. So it was even, the full relief area wasn't available to that person to drop into. And we know, based on our hard card, you can stand on that area, you just can't put the ball in play there. Lots of that. I had one ball move on a green. They're all looking at each other. Oh, I've got a funny one about a marker.
What was that?
Two on the beach course. In fact, let's go 50 metres before that green. This is the same group. I'm walking past. I'd see this guy. He's hit iron off the tee to lay up and then just hit an iron, hit it right into just the right rough. And I walk over and I thought, oh, it's probably a rabbit. Look at all the scratchings everywhere. And so I walk over and he goes, as he's walking back, because he's walked up to the green to check it out, come back to me and he saw me standing at his ball and he says, oh, what do you reckon? I said, yeah. And then he turns around to his marker and says, who's another player, and says, oh, can you come over and check this out? And I'm thinking, I'm standing right here, right next to his ball. His marker said to me, do I need to come over? I said, it's all good, don't worry about it. Because he was basically, I guess they're not used to playing with a walking referee.
Right.
And so he wants to check, rightly so, with his marker, if his marker's okay with him taking relief.
Right.
But it was funny when the marker immediately realised that I was standing there and has gone, do I need to come over? And I said, don't worry about it. It's all good. I have more authority than you do. I didn't say that, but that's the reality of it as a referee. So
as being on the committee, yeah.
And, you know, on our local rules, it says you are authorised to make a final decision.
Yeah.
Players are not entitled to a second opinion.
Yeah.
We saw a second opinion very well televised on TV on the Saturday, which we can talk about if you want. But on that same green, I'm just standing at the back. You know, I'm learning more and more now to just completely get away from the cameras.
after you were known as Cameron Chaser.
Well, I'm not called Hollywood for nothing. No, that's not true. No, you just, the easiest spot to stand is behind the tripod of the camera. It's by far the easiest spot. But I was standing at the back of the green, and all of a sudden, one of the players, you know, at the ball, and he looks up and looks at the other players, and they're talking. At least they've gone, oh, hang on, we do have a referee with the group, and they've looked over him. It was just a simple ball moved. He said, oh, the ball just moved. I said, did you mark it? I knew he hadn't. I said, no, just play it from its new location. But I just thought the marker one was funny. Hey, marker, can you come over and check this? And I'm standing right at the ball. And the marker going, do I need to come over? No, you don't need to come over.
Did you have any others?
You're good. Yeah. Definitely had an we're talking about great international representation in the women's event. And I was with the leader on the Saturday, on the eighth hole, pushed, probably landed on the green and then just rolled out to the back of the grass. And I'm again standing behind the camera and, you know, just minding my own business, watching the play. And she makes a stroke. It was pretty obvious it was a stroke because she's looked up at her caddy in disbelief that the ball didn't go anywhere. And I thought, do I go over and confirm with her right there and then that was a stroke? I'm 90% sure it is, but at some point I need to make sure that that was definitely a stroke. I thought, no, I'm not going to go yet because she's clearly not happy. She's leading. She's just had her ball go nowhere. 20 seconds later, she looks over at me and calls me over. This woman was from Japan. Her English was not great. And she somehow got out the syllables that sounded like unplayable. And the first thing I said was that a stroke? And the caddy said, yeah, it was. Because I didn't know how I was going to ask her, you know, her English was not great. I mean, she could understand 0 through to 9. She somehow got out 2 club lengths when she was asking about the ump. But it's just that you don't even think about that. I mean, how would I have got over that message to her about what you can do, what you can't do? And a lot of it is just acting it out. Anyway, she said unplayable, was very broken. And I've just sort of pointed back on the line. I said, like this. And she said 2 club lengths, although it wasn't that articulate. And I said, yep, either side. We marked it out. First drop went out. So again, I had to, you know, motion to her that that ball's not in play. You need to do it again. So I said those words as you would naturally, but it doesn't mean she understood them. And I've sort of just motioned, you know, that ball's outside the relief area. You need to drop it again. She picked it up. You know, she's asking, can I pick it up initially? You know, can I clean it and all those sort of things? But again, it's just, how many people who play world golf speak English? A lot of them, even if it's not their native tongue. This woman's English wasn't great.
They do say that communication is 80-90% body language and tone. So the words really don't matter too much.
Yeah.
As long as you can, you know, point at a club or point at a relief area and drop it.
Yeah.
Look like a monkey type
thing. Yeah. And that's what, you know, when she marked out the relief area, I thought she was doing herself a disservice. She wasn't coming out far enough to give herself, you know, so it was no nearer the hole.
Yeah.
And I've just actually moved her club for her and just done this and pointed at the hole and without really saying too much. But I think, yeah, you're right. She probably understood what I was doing. And, I mean, that was a good one. We had, the hard card under transportation, we know players and caddies can't get a lift. And there's an exception in the hard card, and that is if they're proceeding under stroke and distance. Right, they're allowed to jump in a car.
Yeah, or get a ride back. Just told by the committee that they can get a ride.
So we had, remember the 18th hole at the beach course, which is a dog leg left, and a lot try to cut the corner to get to the green in 2, and of course, what's all that on the left? It's all red penalty area.
Right.
And there's no way the ball can be lost outside the penalty area.
Right.
Because it's all close on 9. So you've either cleared it or you haven't.
Yep.
And of course, we had lots of ball searches in that penalty area.
Yeah.
And I had one when I was on the 18th hole doing a lot of TIO work with the marquee where I'm looking over and I see the commentator, on-course commentator, drive up in his cart and he goes straight in behind the scoreboard to start searching. So of course, I drive over. Player hasn't arrived. I asked the commentator, whose ball is it? And he said, it's his. And he was about 30 metres away. And I've gone bang with the timer when he arrived in. But of course, that's a situation where, you know, that model local rule, which you don't like, about a provisional ball in that case would help save time. But of course, they're not allowed to do that, so they don't do it. But he's entitled to his 3 minutes of search, right? Even though it is 100% known the ball's in the penalty area, they're entitled to that 3 minutes. And we're all searching. This is all on camera. This is actually all being broadcast, this entire search. Can you believe that? And funny, the camera guy is holding the camera right down at his, almost below his knee, to capture the thickness of the grass, just for some artistic effect. And the commentator's saying, oh, there could be some snakes in here. And anyway, of course, we didn't find it. And of course, the last point crossed was like 200 metres drive back. And he said, can I get a ride? Well, technically, he can only get a ride if he's proceeding under stroke and distance. So you would be splitting hairs if you said, well, no, I can't give you a ride. But of course, because timing is so critical, I said, yeah, jump in the cart. He was proceeding under either back on the line or two club lengths, lateral. He ended up proceeding on back on the line. He was nowhere near his stroke and distance. That would be splitting hairs to say, no, I can't, wouldn't it? When the drive back is like 200 metres.
Yeah, I don't know the wording exactly of the...
It definitely says stroke and distance.
But I wouldn't...
Split hairs?
I wouldn't limit it to stroke and distance. There might be other times when someone's dropped a towel back on the tee. I'd either go and grab the towel or I'd take the caddy back and, you know, that kind of thing. If the rules committee are doing it, that is okay, in my opinion. That's how I write the local rule or the hard card, whatever.
Yeah, I mean...
I wouldn't... You know, we saw on Liv, where Joachim Niemann, who we will talk about with a rules blunder, he won the tournament yesterday in Mayakoba in Mexico. And in the playoff, because they'd actually taken a bit longer to play than... what they should do or wanted to. Daylight was escaping them, and they had this playoff of four holes between him and Sergio. And after they hit their drives down this 18th hole of the par four, the tour referee, Brad Olin, actually said, guys, do you want to lift up to your balls? And they gave them a lift from the tee shot to their second shots, just to try and speed them up. You know, 2 minutes, whatever it was, it's going to help out. So,
especially when it's the same for every player in that.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you're trying to get to, the same for every player. You know, if there's a, where do we play the Heritage? The Heritage had a shuttle service from the ninth green to the 10th tee. I didn't think it was that
big. Like 100 metres.
I didn't think it was that big a walk. But they decided they want to give the players some support from the 9th to the 10th. And so everyone had that opportunity of using it. And so they, so it was no issue. That was a shuttle service put in place for the players. But other than that, only the committee. They don't want someone, some drinks guy, going, oh, I'll give you a lift back here or whatever.
No. Well, that happened on the weekend.
Oh, did it?
Where a course marshal, like a volunteer, gave a player a ride.
Yeah.
And the referee came on the radio and said, we're going to be a few minutes behind. He had to take stroke and distance, and this person gave him a ride back.
Okay.
And one of the sort of tournament directors came on pretty hard and said, no, we don't do that. Like, it's up to the committee to do that. It's up to the referees. It's up to the officials to do that.
Yeah.
Not to have anybody, any Tom, Dick and Harry, you know, resident on a Sunday drive taking that player back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was quite interesting. That's something I learned.
So the drinks guy, or course marshal, actually did it.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
So did the player get penalised?
No. Okay. Because effectively the referee was there. Sort of allowed it to happen.
Okay.
Until the tournament director came on the radio and said, no, we don't.
Don't allow that to happen.
Don't let sort of anybody to give a player a penalty.
Because then once you start, then you, then they have this idea in their head that they can just give anyone, they let me do it on hole three, I'll do it on hole
Or a player can think that in the next tournament, hey, mate, can you give me a ride back? And so, like, I'm not saying I would have done it or not done it, but I now know definitely not to do that. After that, I had another one on the third hole. Remember the par three? Called over. I was sitting on the forward tee, which no one knew I was sitting there for a little while. It was just so relaxing. all the players, and there's actually a lot of people spectating on the weekend, walked right past me 10 metres and I was hit behind all these bushes on the tee, and group on the green called me over.
Yeah.
And we've heard about this and we've read about this situation heaps, but I've never seen it happen real. And that was the player's ball came to rest on top of an abandoned ball.
Oh, yes.
And it was on the left-hand side of the green. As I'm walking over, how can I help?
Was it my ball? Because I've had one.
I don't believe
I've
so.
Lost one left there.
Might have been. As I'm walking over, she's smiling and going, oh, my ball's coming on top of another ball. And I joke because she was obviously in a good mood.
Yeah.
I said, try doing that again 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And everyone had a good laugh at that because I'm a funny guy. Anyway, so...
there we go.
No, I just said, try doing that again, having your ball come to rest on top of another ball. So, of course, her immediate thought was, so what do? You know, do I place it next to her? And I said, well, you can actually get a club length, which got her out of the rough. So, she had a difficult shot, but at least the ball was sitting on closely mown grass. But she didn't have much of a backswing. I watched the rest of the play. She ended up with a 4, but never had that happen.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I knew the rule.
So, what'd you do?
Well, she was entitled to a drop for free, which she did.
Did she move the ball? Did she get rid of the abandoned ball? Or she just
She did. There? She did pick it up and go, anyone play a... Strixon 3, she said to the rest of them and the volunteers and everyone else, because she obviously didn't play that ball. But I said, just mark the spot of that ball and you can pick up both and clean yours and drop it. But again, never had that happen. Read about that 50 times. And, you know, I had that conversation.
It would have been cooler if she actually hit the ball and then goes,
That happens a lot, doesn't it? That happens more often.
Well,
a player makes a stroke and two balls come out.
By a lot. I've seen it happen 3 times.
And I've only seen this happen once.
Right.
Yeah. So it would happen more often where a guy hits a ball out of the rough and 2 balls come out, or a girl. But for a ball to end up on an abandoned ball is unusual. To know also that, hey, it's sitting on top of another ball. That happened. What else is there? A few unplayables. We'll talk about Rory, one of the leaders on the 5th hole, back on the line. He said... can I drop it on that tee? In other words, that was the next hole's teeing area.
Right.
Can I drop it on that tee? He asked that question. What
was
it?
Was that on the line? Par 3.
So this is the 5th hole.
Yeah.
Down the fence. And he wanted to drop it on the 6th tee, coming back before that beautiful par 3, 7th hole. This is one of your countrymen.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so...
you want to drop it on the 6th tee?
Yeah, well, because...
he'd hit it right of...
hit it back onto the 5th green.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's hit his second, it's a par 5.
Yeah.
Hit his second shot, so the 3 wood just hooked left.
Ah.
And he looked at me and I was just standing off to the side. He said, should I hit another one? I said, it might be worth just hitting a provisional.
Right.
Here's the interesting thing. He said, do I need to drop it right here? In other words, he thought, well, this is where I've just made that stroke from. I need to drop this ball as close as possible to that spot. I said, no, you've got a club length from that spot. He goes, oh, so I can drop it. I said, you can drop it within a club
length. Well, that was the rule back in 2018.
Okay, so he was pleased with that and he took advantage of the full club length because it got him out onto a flatter spot on the fairway. So he was quite pleased. And unfortunately, he pushed that one right through some spectators into a bush. I've walked over left, found the ball out of bounds.
Okay.
I asked a referee on my way, I said, can you drive over and secure that provisional? It was in amongst a lot of people. I just want to make sure it's okay because it's probably about to become the ball in play.
Yeah.
I walk over, spectators are over there. I said, is that the ball? They said, yes. I turned around to the player. He sort of realised then at that point. I picked it up, gave it back to the caddy, but then his provisional now ball in play, it was unplayable. So that's when he asked, can I go back on that tee? I said, that's fine. And it came back to that on the line. So I've actually gone flagstick. It was only 60 metres. Flagstick his ball, and I've picked a fixed object in the distance, and I've walked straight towards it. And I went on and got on that teeing area. He'd already thrown a tee on the ground. I put a tee basically on that line. I said, that's your line right there. I said, anywhere on that line. He actually paced it out, and they went back another 3 metres. You know, 67, 68. Okay, I'll drop it here. Dropped it on the line, probably moved 10 centimetres in play, penalty of 1 stroke. But you want to talk about back on the line relief?
Well, we saw that Rory made a big mistake at a recent tournament. where he went to take back on the line relief and he dropped it because this rule changed 2023. So he dropped it. I mean, this rule, this back on the line, we've spoken about it before. It used to be prior to 2019 that you had to drop it on the line, but it could roll up to 2 club lengths in any direction. So it was like a big circle. Then they changed it in 2019, so it had to stay in the relief area, but the relief area was 1 club either side of the line, and you could drop it anywhere within that relief area. It didn't have to just be on the line. So it was like a half circle. And then they found that players were stuffing it up and playing it from where it rolled closer to the hole, because that's what they were used to in 2018. So they came out with this local rule saying that if a player does that and they didn't realise that, they can either drop it again or they can just play it and there's not going to be a penalty. I mean, that is just, there's an option there, just is crap. So they went and fixed it again, went back to what it previously was, which makes so much more sense considering it's called back on the line. So you drop it back on that line, but now it's only got 1 club length in which it can roll. So it's a 1 club length circle that it can roll. That's the relief area that it can roll up to within, stay within the 1 club length circle. And Rory was playing like 2022 rules, and so he decided to drop it within the club length because it probably helped him out. It probably got him away from a tree. And so he dropped it to the side. Now, if you drop it, if you don't drop it back on the line, even if you played it from the relief area, you played from the wrong place. Right, So still a 2-shot penalty, which is different to the one that Joachim Niemann, it's similar to the one Joachim Niemann had in Liv, where he took free relief from a cart path and then measured out 2 club lengths and dropped it within the 2nd club length, but you only get 1 club length free relief from the nearest point of complete relief. And so he actually did play from the wrong place as well, and he was the leader at the time, took his score back 2 shots, but he ended up winning in a playoff, which was fantastic.
1.3b2, is that reasonable judgment? Somewhere in that region of the rules, it's in there, 1.3 somewhere.
Right.
Reasonable judgment. So obviously the committee had a conversation with Rory afterwards. And if that said to Rory, talk us through your drop on X hole, and he said, well, I worked out where the line was and I dropped it. And the video showed afterwards, it wasn't quite where it should have been. But he said, no, I thought it was. He'd be okay, wouldn't he? Because he'd get away with through the reasonable judgment. But the fact that he probably said, well, I worked out where the line was and I knew I could drop it up to a club length off that line. If he said that, that's when the committee would have said, no, well, I'm sorry, you can't do that.
No chance of coming back from that one.
But had he said, no, I thought that's where the line was, and they've gone, well, it's probably a bit off that. Oh, well, that's where I thought it was. He'd probably be okay.
Yeah, but if they didn't think it was reasonable, then
no, of course.
He wouldn't be okay.
Of course. But if it was within a club length and he's sort of lining it up.
I mean, if you can't see the flag.
For example, he's hidden by a tree, obscured, then something.
Possibly. But if you can see the flag, it's very unlikely that would be, a club length would be reasonable.
So again, and I like to do this. Okay, so what is the line in which you cross in which it becomes reasonable? Is it half a club length? At some point, you've got to say, that's fine. Look, he did everything he could under the circumstances to establish where that line was, and he's dropped, and we've worked out now it was 27 centimetres off. That's okay. But what you're suggesting is maybe a club length to the side is not a reasonable judgment. But at some point, the committee would have to say, unreasonable, reasonable. Yeah. And they're never going to write that into the rules because that's up to the committee on the day to decide. But the fact that he's come out and goes, no, I definitely dropped it off a club length off. They've gone, well, we haven't followed the correct procedure. Doesn't matter how far off it was. You've admitted that you didn't drop it on the line.
Yeah.
Reasonable judgment or otherwise.
Yeah. Mm. And something similar with Joachim, or Jaco, I don't actually know.
Oh, you, what are you? You know, his mates call him.
Ivor tell me that I've done that. I've announced that wrong. But I think, Arlo White was called, just calling him Yarko, so that must be, the N must be silent.
Is that Joaquin?
Well, that's how white people would say it, but I'm not sure that's how the Spanish say it.
Of course, of course.
So he, yeah, he obviously thought, and why he didn't get a referee, and I don't know. Some of them try and avoid the referees, whether they just don't like them because, you know, Yarko's always getting timed because he's so slow.
Doesn't want to see them.
Yeah, just want to try and avoid them altogether. Maybe they get in his vibe or something like that. But it's just so easy just to get a referee to help you out. Even though those ones are the simplest rulings, like taking a drop off a cart path, it's always nearest point of complete relief, plus a club length. It's never been two club lengths. It would have been funny if he said, no, I was just taking unplayable. He could have saved himself a shot.
Yeah. God. Very funny.
You know? But it would be from where the ball is, not nearest point of complete, complete relief, and then two club lengths. It would be from where the ball is. So if he dropped within two club lengths where the ball was, he could get away if he said, no, I was just taking
up. If someone worded him up beforehand?
Yeah.
So you're saying you want him to cheat?
I definitely do not want him to cheat. So yeah, I mean, it's a interesting situation. Then he signed the card, but he didn't realize what he'd done was wrong. You know, in years gone past, decade ago, that was DQ. And he's leading the tournament. So he's very lucky that they've changed the rules so that it's not a DQ if you don't know the rules. So they just added the two shot penalty on the next day.
It's funny how volunteers can get very sensitive. Sorry, this is a new topic. Volunteers get very sensitive to when you try to help them. And like, there was one situation where I was talking to a walking scorer about a ruling I just gave, and she just wanted to clarify, is that a free drop? You know, that sort of stuff. They know it is, but they just want to confirm. And then she came over to me like 60 seconds later and said, oh, now while we were doing all that and talking, I think I've missed a shot each from the other two players. I said, oh, just ask it, Katie, you know, afterwards. She absolutely bit my head off. And, oh, I know that. Like, I know to do that. So, okay, would you rather me say nothing? You know, I'm just saying, don't go and ask the player direct. First thing is just go and ask the caddy. So I was saying it so innocently. Oh, just, you know, just go and ask the caddy.
I'd go and ask the player. Was that a double or a triple?
And she just bit my, oh, I know that. It's like, you know, they've been doing it for 27 years and they don't like being told how to do their walking scorer role. I've got another two more stories, if I may, from the tour.
Go for it.
One was in that same penalty area on Beach 18 on the corner, and I see them searching, so drive off, start the timer, drive off, get in there, whose ball are we searching for? Another player enters, it's very, very thick grass in there, and he said, why are we in here searching for it? We know it's in here. And I said straight back to that player, I said, if we find it within 3 minutes, he's entitled to hit it. At which point he didn't like my answer. At which point he turned around and exited the search area. It's like...
To be honest, I don't like your answer either. But Michael Long did hit a shot from the penalty area in 2018, I think, and got it out of there and won the tournament. So if it is in a position where they can hit it, potentially.
But it's interesting that it's like a 3 minute search time doesn't apply when a ball's in a penalty area. That's almost what that player was implying. Like
he was saying, get on with it. I mean, he's hit a terrible shot, just take your penalty.
But that's not his call, though.
No, it's not, unfortunately.
His caddy can say that to the player, but that's not his call. And as I said what I meant. Like, if he finds it, he has a choice.
Yeah.
You can either play it or take penalty area relief. One more ball, cleaning a ball.
You should have said to him, are you giving advice that the player shouldn't play it from where it lies?
Right. Player lifted for interference.
Right.
And the referee on hand just said, and this is where a player could go, yeah, I know, but I don't think the player said that. You know the player you were talking to him. we were talking, you were talking to him Saturday afternoon after play. So you know who it is. And the referee said, make sure you don't clean it. Because again, the player could have come back with, like, of course I know. Anyway, the player said, yeah, no, that's fine. So held it with the old pincer movement. And then without even thinking or something, at some point later, the ball went into the pocket. And so there was some concern about, was that ball cleaned or not? And there was a question raised before signing the scorecard. And they just simply, and it's a good one, I think, and that is, how can you be cop a one-stroke penalty for cleaning a ball when lifted for interference if the ball was already clean?
And was the ball already clean?
And that's what it came down to. The ball was like, there was not a mark on the ball. There was no way that ball could have been cleaned any further.
How's that?
Because it was already fine. There was nothing on it.
Why?
Because it was already clean. Oh, because they've had that conversation. And the tournament director went in and spoke to the player about that particular situation.
Right.
And it was like, well, I've just pulled it out of the box on that tee.
But he's like, had one shot and it's gone in the dirt.
No, it was just on the fringe of the green. So that's where...
He's got a small piece of grass.
Correct. That's where establishing the facts is important. And rather than going, hey, your ball's in your pocket, you've clearly cleaned it, it was the common sense of, well, it probably couldn't have been cleaned at all.
Why did he put it in his pocket?
Oh, correct. He just forgot. Just, you know, he was doing this. He was doing this knowing that I don't want to be seen to be cleaning it.
Right.
And then at some point in the next 60 seconds, while waiting, totally he's just checking his yardage book, doing something, checking the greens book, whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
And he's going, oh, this is a bit of a bother. I'll put it in my pocket.
Yeah. Instead of just putting it down on the ground.
Correct. Yeah. Which I think a lot of players wouldn't know to do that. Because if you didn't know the rules, you would think, hang on, if I put this on the ground, it's like I put it in play or something. Now, we know that's not the case. 14.4 says that. But I think a player would think, if I put this on the ground, there's some consequences of that. And we know there's not. But you think, if you put it on the ground, let go of it, it's like I've put it back in play.
Where are these people learning golf?
They learn golf, not the rules.
Strange.
We know 14.4, they don't.
Have you got any others from the...
Probably I just didn't come that well prepared.
Did you have any balls go right on hole one while you were there on the weekend?
Hole one on the beach course near the maintenance shed?
Yeah.
Just ever so slightly run out of the fairway, not really.
Because they had a big rolling there on Thursday night.
They did. Thursday or Friday.
Did you see what it was all about?
No, but I saw the area on Saturday. Okay. I saw what they were talking about.
Was half of it penalty area?
I think almost the whole area was penalty area.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In other words, it went right on that fairway penalty area. Yeah. But what we're talking about is, in fact, behind all that was the ground staff maintenance area.
Yeah.
And so the ball was very playable sitting in the middle of nowhere
inside
that maintenance area. There just so happened to be a car. Actually, it was right underneath one of the wheels. So it was actually right underneath one of the cars. Parked in there, and it just came down to, was that car a movable or immovable obstruction, and whether the player could get relief given that the ball was in the penalty area.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. Someone came across and said, if it's not movable, if the keys aren't in it, it's an immovable. And I was like, I'm pretty sure if it's not movable, it's a TIO because it's temporary.
It's not normally there. And I
gave similar relief. Rory, we've got a video on YouTube of Rory having similar relief where they couldn't move the car, so they gave him TIO relief.
Yes.
That was about 2-3 years ago. And then I had one last year in Oman, actually. This player's hit it so far left, not out of bounds. His truck's parked up there, which is fine. They're probably maintenance staff or whatever. And I ended up giving him 16.1, but he could have actually asked for TIO if he was smart enough, because we couldn't move the truck. So, yeah, I think it was clarified afterwards that it was indeed a TIO if it wasn't movable.
Right, not an immovable obstruction, but a temporary.
It's very important that...
very important, especially when the ball's in a penalty area.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things I learnt on the weekend was if your ball's in a penalty area, we know 17.3 says you get nothing when your ball's in a penalty area. You either play it or you take relief. But what I learned is if you have interference by a TIO and your ball's in the penalty area, you are entitled to free relief inside that penalty area, regardless of where that TIO is.
Yeah.
TIO can be in the penalty area, outside, or as you said, not even on the course.
Yeah, it could be out of bounds. So you still get relief from a TIO that's out of bounds.
So when we're doing the ball search left of 18, if we found it, the big scoreboard there left of 18 was right in the right on the line of play.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going through my head, if he does find it, he's going to ask me for relief. And I now know that if it's a TIO, no problem.
Yep.
It's one of the times you can drop for free inside a penalty area.
Yes.
Which we're not going to go through. But
no, no. So I've got a couple of stories as well. So we obviously went through Rory, and then I think we've pretty much gone through Jaco as well. He just tried to drop free relief in two club links, not one.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the two-shot penalty. Now I had a listener send through a bit of a story, so it's not through Clubland exactly, but it is Clubland. They were playing middle day off the blue tees, but for some reason they forgot, and off one of the holes they played off the white tees, so outside the blue teeing area. And three of them hit it down the middle or in the rough, whatever, and one of them hit it out of bounds. And then he hit off again and hit down the middle. That was Shark Bait. That's his nickname.
Please do Shark Bait. Hoo-ha.
And then they realised what they'd done. All three of them, well, four of them, had realised what the mistake they'd made was playing from the whites, not the blues. So they all corrected their mistake, but they were wondering whether Shark Bait is five off the tee or three off the tee like everyone else.
Yep.
And I came back to them and said, look, they had to fix the mistake. This is under rule 6.1.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that one of them hit it out of bounds and then he's hit it off the whites again, he's continued play with the same ball effectively, even though it's not the same ball. He's continued play with the same ball. So they actually haven't tried to correct their mistake. None of those strokes count. None of the penalty stroke counts. And they're all just playing, all four of them. Shark Bait, Gav, Pid and Soz. So thank you, Soz, for sending that through.
So
they're all three off the tee.
6.1B2.
Yeah. And now if they had finished the hole and teed off on the next hole, or if, in the case of the 18th, signed their scorecard, walked off the green, actually, I think it says, they would all be DQ'd.
Returning the scorecard.
If it was a Stableford round, you only DQ'd for that hole. But if it's a middle round, you'd all be DQ'd for the round. But they did manage to fix their error and obviously had to add the two-shot penalty.
Player gets a general penalty and must correct the mistake by playing a ball from inside the teeing area. The ball played from outside the teeing area is not in play. That stroke and any more strokes before the mistake is corrected, including strokes made and any penalty strokes solely from playing that ball, do not count. If the player does not correct the mistake before making a stroke to begin another hole, or for the final hole of the round before returning the scorecard, the player is disqualified.
Yeah, so that was a good one to send through. Thanks, Soz. Now another one. Bob sent through a Clubland story, and this is an interesting one. It certainly got me thinking. A fence with an out-of-bounds fence with posts and three wires, and where one of the wires is broken off, and they discussed at the time and they said no, the wire is still part of the boundary fence, but they got further clarification from the R&A and they said no, the wire broken off the boundary fence is actually a movable obstruction.
And it came into the course.
Yeah, it came into the course.
By some distance.
So the player could have actually moved that broken off wire. Which is quite interesting, because if your fence is leaning over onto the course,
yeah,
what's that? Is that still just part of the boundary fence? Or
I think so.
Do you get to
push it back?
Push it back.
No. The first 2 days I was on the 18th hole a lot. There was a lot of TIO relief for the Beach Club marquee, positioned very close behind the 18th green. And we know that if the ball comes in on or under the TIO, they're entitled to use the drop zone. There were two there with an arrow, pointing in either directions to direct the player. I had one player, and I always say to the player, you can still take nearest point of complete relief and one club length, and you can play with a drop zone. Now, of course, all players bar one use the drop zone. And some of them even looked at me silly when I suggested they could take nearest point. And one of the girls laughed, said, why wouldn't I use the drop zone? I said, well, and she said it in a very joking tone. I said, I'm just telling you what your options are. I'm not directing you to what you should use. Yeah, the dropping zone is the obvious option to use, but it doesn't mean I just wanted to run through your options. One of the players chose nearest point because it was closer to the hole than where the dropping zone was. The dropping zone, interestingly, the one on the right, was on quite a slope that even when they dropped it at the top of the circle, it actually rolled out the back and required two drops and then a place.
Right.
And even then it required a drop, place, move. A few times because of the slope of the dropping zone. I had one girl fly the Beach Club marquee completely. Didn't even look like coming in on or under the TIO.
Right.
Actually flew, it must have been 40 metres, let's say 44 yards, 40 metres beyond the flag stick, at which point, of course, she was not entitled to use the dropping zones because her ball was not in on or under, but she had interference, obviously, line of sight. So I just did the old more than one club length, less than two relief, no nearer the hole. The spectators were pretty chuffed to see a ball fly that far. It was almost on the 14th green. There was almost a wrong green interference before the TIO. But
well, that sounds like you had a lot of fun at the Vic
Open. It was a great event.
Yeah, it was a great event.
And spectated a lot of people. Interestingly, with that last men's group, when they fell out of contention, the crowd just died a little bit following that. And of course, I said to one of the marshals on the weekend, is there any other golf tournament in the world or country in the world that encourages spectators to be that close to the players? It can't happen that often.
No.
People are literally standing, for those who don't know, you can have the entire gallery following that group literally standing 8 to 10 metres behind the player about to play on the fairway.
That's one of the sort of selling points, the points of difference for that golf tournament, as well as the fact that we don't really want the spectators walking around in the snake-infested grass.
A lot of snakes.
Yeah. So,
never thought about that.
When they were starting the tournament back in 2013, that was one of the main reasons. Let's not put up ropes because, they're a waste of time. We'll have the point of difference that the players and the spectators would come and be so close to the players. And the tagline back then was walk the fairways with the players.
Yeah.
And we've only ever had, I think we've only ever roped off like one or two holes. 15 on the beach sometimes gets roped off because what will happen is the players will be on the green.
And they're driving it.
And if they're not driving it, they're just laying up or they can't get to the green. But the spectators will be in that little valley bit where the players can't see them.
Yes.
Or they don't turn around. They never seem to turn around and go, oh, this player's waiting ahead. So sometimes we wrote that off. But if there's volunteers there to just tell the spectators to get out of the way, then that usually works better.
Mm. It is quite unique.
Yeah.
Spectators that close.
Yeah.
They're all standing around the edge of the green.
Yeah.
Very, very close and on the fairways.
Langers will tell you that one of the reasons that they put ropes in, because way, way back they used to, spectators would just walk the course. But one of the reasons they put ropes in was to keep them out of the way of the TV cameras.
Yeah.
And so the TV cameras have access to the players, and it doesn't delay their missing the shot and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right, so I think what's your next tournament then, podcast?
Well, you've got some more for me. I've just done four in a row.
Yeah.
So now I have February off. My next event will be the National, which is the last not open to all. It's quite a small field. It's the last event of the season to determine the order of merit winner and et cetera, et cetera. I think that's around mid-March is my next event.
Very good. Mine is Oman that I head to mid-February. And then I've got Live Jeddah, Live Hong Kong, and Asian Tour Macau, which will be fantastic. Now, the Golf Rules Question of the Week 109.
Yes.
You have one for us?
I do.
Go for
it. Just going to write this, just finishing in here for the 14th hole. All right. GRQ OTW for episode 109. Danny the D-grade golfer.
Okay.
Danny the D-grade golfer hits her tee shot way left into thick bushes on the 14th hole at Wombat Hills. Snake territory. After 1 minute of searching, she finds and identifies her ball and decides to take unplayable ball relief. Unable to retrieve her original ball, she drops another ball correctly in a lateral relief area. As she's working through her yardage book and waiting for others to play, a child crawls under the bush and retrieves her ball. The child asks the caddy if he can keep the ball, when the caddy realises it's not Danny the D-grade golfer's ball. The caddy advises Danny and they continue searching for her ball, finding it about 1 minute later. However, now 5 minutes after they began searching for the ball originally. She picks up the drop ball and continues play with the original ball, holding out in five more strokes. She then tees off on her next hole. What is her hole score for the 14th hole?
Interesting. Need a bit of maths skill in there, I reckon.
You may need some letters rather than maths. But anyway, I'll leave that with the listeners and viewers.
Well, hopefully you'll have a crack at that. I know that Ruin will have a crack at that on YouTube, which will be fantastic.
Yep.
Thank you everyone for tuning in for episode 109 of the Golf Rules Questions podcast. You've been Blakey. We talked mainly about Vic Open.
Great event.
This week with podcast man of the people, funny guy, Nick Fee. And Blakey, so signing off. See you next time.